Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. Now, here's your host, CJ.
Hello, everyone. I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fire It Up with CJ on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay tuned with us for the next hour to ignite your best life. Each Thursday on 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, we'll have new voices from a wide range of experts and everyday people about the best ways to make the most of your life. Today on my show, I have the Executive Director of Real Change, Tim Harris. Real Change is an organization that was founded 16 years ago by Tim and is one of 100 street papers in some 40 countries that give the homeless a voice and a chance to earn an income with dignity. Real Change is Tim Harris's second homeless newspaper. His first was in Boston, and it was called Spare Change. Tim Harris has won an honorary political genius award by our local paper for winning political battles and even changing the landscape of local politics. In addition, he's been recognized by the Society of Professional Journalists for his intellectual honesty, deep understanding of people and their problems. Welcome, Tim.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah. So let's start off by telling people about your organization and how you first got fired up with the work that you're doing.
I've had one foot in alternative journalism and the other in poor people's organizing for about 20 years, a little bit longer than that. And I started my first street paper in Boston when I was working as a homeless organizer, doing mostly direct action style organizing, kind of inspired by Mitch Snyder, who was a famous homeless activist in the 80s. And I was really struck with how the horizon for social change organizing is very long and uncertain, and the needs of homeless people are very immediate and dire. And I was working with homeless people with having the value that homeless people need to be involved in their own liberation, that social change on behalf of homeless people isn't as powerful as social change with homeless people. So I was trying to find a way to bridge that contradiction. And the street paper idea was very appealing to me because it gave people something that they could sell on the street and put money in their pocket and meet their needs through their own efforts in a way that was a sort of an equal exchange as opposed to a charity exchange. And they could also be part of the larger movement for social change and be engaged in that while meeting their own needs.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that. I know you have, is it 400 vendors right now, or maybe more? I don't know. How many vendors do you have right now? These are vendors who sell the newspaper. And as I understand it, they buy the paper from you at 30 or 35 cents, and they sell it for a dollar. Is that right?
That's right. They buy the paper for 35 cents, and they sell it for a dollar. They get the first 10 for free when they sign up and go through the orientation. Our value is to meet people where they are, to be a very low threshold, immediately available form of employment that gives people an alternative to the underground economy and, you know, the vulnerabilities to criminalization that go along with that, and, you know, allow people to earn an income in a way that supports their human dignity as opposed to as opposed to undermines it. We've been doing this for, well, as you said, for 16 years now, and we've really grown. I mean, we are the largest, most successful street newspaper in North America. And what that looks like is we're a weekly newspaper that publishes between 18 and 20,000 copies of each issue, often sells out of those. We serve between 350 and 400 vendors typically on any given month. We're also an advocacy and organizing project. In addition to being a newspaper, we're engaged in social change. We do campaigns to improve the lives of poor people, defend their human and civil rights. And, yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah, so let's talk about one of the things that you've said a couple times is make sure that they have, a livelihood with dignity. I mean, what does that mean? Tell us a little bit about what that means in practice. Tell us a little bit about what that means in practice.
Well, you know, the thing to understand about mass homelessness, modern mass homelessness that really dates to the late 70s, is that it's a byproduct of globalization. And as the manufacturing jobs have gone overseas, as the economy has split into a service economy, an economy for professionals, you know, an information economy and people who have that skill set, a lot of work has been eliminated. And in that process, you wind up with a lot of surplus people who have been pushed out of the economy and who frankly, you know, don't have many opportunities, do not have many roles. There are not many roles for them in the economy. So you have this large group of people, you know, more than 3 million people on any given day who are homeless in America. And some of those people are transitionally homeless. You know, they're on hard times. They don't have work now. They don't have housing now, but they will get back into work and housing and become working poor again, but still vulnerable to homelessness. There's sort of a revolving door between the working poor and the homeless. And then you have people who are sort of, you know, the permanent underclass of homeless folks who, you know, for various reasons, various vulnerabilities, are very, very unlikely to be reabsorbed into the legitimate economy again. The growth of homelessness, the explosion of homelessness in America, and the explosion of the prison industry, which has also quadrupled and quintupled over the last three decades in terms of its size, those follow very parallel tracks, and they are about surplus people. People who exist outside of the formal economy. So what we do is we give those folks a way of earning an income, either as a bridge strategy back into the economy where they will again be working poor, or as a more permanent means of making an income that gives them, you know, alternative to things like street prostitution, shoplifting, petty crime, selling drugs in the underground informal economy, all of which leaves people vulnerable to criminalization and really undermines their human dignity. I've come to believe that homelessness is primarily about dehumanization, and to view what we do as essentially a project of humanization, because part of what happens when people get involved in selling the paper is they find themselves embedded in a network of community relationships, supportive community relationships, people who care about them, who see them regularly, who buy the paper from them. This becomes a supportive friend network, and it's really the most transformational part of what we do. This is what really changes lives and helps people to see their prospects and their place in the world quite differently.
Yeah, so it's really the humanization and the dignity comes with the community of people that they connect with and feeling like they're back. They're back in a meaningful community where their life and their livelihood makes a difference. Is that what you meant?
That's absolutely right. And okay. The first thing that happens is that, you know, when people find that they can come in here and they can spend, you know, $7 and walk out with 20 papers, and several hours later have 20, 25 bucks in their pocket, instead, you know, they've at least tripled their money through their own effort. What they experience there is a level of agency, of personal agency that many of them have not experienced for a while. You know, the knowledge that they can get up in the morning and through their own effort make a difference in their own lives, move their life forward, be able to have the money that they need to meet their basic needs.
And you know what? So we actually have to wrap.
That's pretty huge in of itself.
Okay.
You know?
And let's wrap. I want to talk a little bit more about that personal agency when we get back from our break. So you're listening to Fired Up with CJ. Today we have Tim Harris, who's the executive director of Real Change, a nonprofit in Seattle that creates opportunity and a voice to low-income people. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about more about the homeless, and you can find out more about our guests and listen to this and past shows by going to www.fireitupwithcj.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heart warmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
So this may sound simple, but when you're planning a road trip, you have to figure out where you're going first. With the Take Shape for Life program, the destination is living life at optimal health. So what does that mean? It means more energy. It means less medications. And yes, it means losing the extra pounds, which is actually part of the getting there. Talk to a Take Shape for Life health coach who's been there. Listen to their story and their journey. Call 877-520-SIMPLE. That's 877-520-SIMPLE. Results will vary. Talk to your doctor before starting program. Call for details.
The 19th Annual Women of Wisdom Conference is February 17th through the 21st. Our theme is Women Arise, Unveil the Power of the Divine Feminine. Special guests are Susan Weed, Carolyn Sutherland, and many others, sharing their gifts through experiential events all weekend long. Join our email list at womenofwisdom.org and watch for announcements about the conference. That's womenofwisdom.org.
Ugh, aren't you tired of the same old negative vibe?
Hey, Valerie, have you heard about TransformationTalkRadio.com?
No, what's that?
Dr. Pat is launching a new network. And
Dr. Pat?
Dr. Pat.
How many hours is she going to be on?
It won't be all Dr. Pat. She'll be joined by her friends, transformative hosts from around the globe. TransformationTalkRadio.com is a 24/7 network.
24 hours of Dr. Pat and her guests?
No, 24 hours of Dr. Pat and her hosts.
Oh, very good. When does this start?
This starts in August.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited. Where is it going to be broadcast?
You're going to be able to hear her in Seattle, Boston, Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island, on over 300 cable radio stations, and on the Internet everywhere.
Listen live at TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Great. We should spread the word.
Absolutely. Spread the word.
Go to TransformationTalkRadio.com.
1230 WBLQ. This is the Transformation Talk Radio Network, locally on Stereo 1230 WBLQ and WBLQ.net.
Hey, welcome everyone. We're back on Fired Up with CJ. Today my guest is Tim Harris, as Executive Director of Real Change, which is the largest and most successful newspaper for the homeless and poverty in North America. But before you can continue, I want to make sure that people know how to get to the newspaper. Tim, your URL is
www.realchangenews.org? Realchangenews.org.
Okay, cool. And are there any other are there any upcoming events? I know that sometimes you do workshops, and I know that you also travel around. Is there anything that listeners need to know about in terms of your appearances or what's happening on your website or generally?
Tonight we're being presented with the Seattle Human Rights Award for 2010. If anybody is in town and they want to make it down to City Hall at 7 o'clock for that, it's going to be a pretty cool ceremony put on by the Seattle Human Rights Commission.
Excellent. Congratulations. I didn't read that. Excellent. Congratulations on that. So before we were talking about the personal agency is, and we were basically talking about who basically are some of your vendors and what they get out of the program. And one of the things I thought would be interesting is to share some stories about, kind of how Real Change has changed a person's life and how some of that personal agency, what does that exactly mean and how does that translate to an individual that works for you?
Gosh, there's so many stories. It's hard to pick one or two. There was a couple, named Bruce and Rainey, and their story is pretty public. They wouldn't mind me talking about this. When I first met them, Rainey was working as a stripper. They were both heroin addicts. Selling Real Change allowed her to leave work as a stripper, because they were, both selling the paper and successful about it. So that was, one way in how the paper was able to allow them to make a living in a way that didn't undermine their dignity. I watched them try to get clean from heroin for probably 4 or 5 years,
Where
they would kick and then they would relapse, and it would happen over and over, and it was heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And they were selling the paper throughout that. And one of the questions I often get is, aren't you enabling people when you allow them to sell the paper and then they go out and they buy drugs with it or things like that? And my answer to that is always, I don't think so, because somebody who is an addict is going to get their money one way or another to support their habit, and they're either going to do it in a way that undermines their dignity or that doesn't. And when people don't have their dignity undermined and when they have their dignity supported, it brings them to a position where they finally can make that move in their life and be in a place where it's going to work, as opposed to being continually beaten down and degraded. And, what really shifted their life was they had a baby. And the daughter went to live with her grandmother for a couple of years, and they got clean. They continued to sell the paper as they were working on other pieces of their life. And they've been clean for, 11 years now.
Oh, my God. Wow.
11 years now. And they just spoke. They told their story at our annual event this year, and their daughter was up on the stage with them. Now they're this working class couple, who lives in one of the suburbs and indistinguishable from any other working class couple. To meet them, you would never know that they had this difficult past, and their daughter's doing great, and they have a family and they have a normal life. And they still sell the paper to make ends meet, because, sometimes they have work that does it for them, and other times, they have tough times, and the paper is something that's here that they can always fall back on, that they know that they can always do to make money.
Mm. Yeah, that's an amazing story. And I think the thing that's so amazing is that in some ways, just knowing that you can get a job, there's something very empowering about that, knowing that you can get a job where, like you said, that you don't have to, strip in front of someone or I think I understand a little bit about the dehumanizing pieces of it. Because even just having a job where people, you know, you can look people in the face and you know that you're making a clean living, it probably makes a huge difference to your psyche, you know.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. I mean, there's so many reasons that people become homeless, you know. I mean, I talk about globalization and the deindustrialization of our economy mm-hmm. being part of it, but that's abstract, you know. I mean, really, one way to look at it is the game of musical chairs, mm-hmm. you know, which is the game we all learn when we're children that teaches us that there are winners and losers and you don't want to be a loser. And you think about, you know, scarce resources like jobs that pay a livable wage and affordable housing as the chairs, as the scarce mm-hmm. resources, and, you know, people circling those scarce resources. And who's going to get the chair, you know? Who's going to get the affordable housing and who's going to get the job that pays a livable wage? It's going to be the mm-hmm. people who are most able to compete for that. And the folks mm-hmm. who get left out are the people who are vulnerable to falling out of the economy. And those are people who are disabled. Some 70% of our vendors self-identify as having some sort of a disability that prevents them from having regular full-time employment. You know,
give us an example of some of what, I mean, is that like, you know, give us an example of what disabled means.
You know, somebody who's been a laborer all of their life and their knees have given out and they can't do it anymore.
Okay.
Somebody who has a health condition where they can't, like, walk two blocks without being out of breath and all they can do is physical labor. Somebody who, you know, addiction is a disability. Mental illness is a disability. You know, those sorts of things. But also, and all kinds of health issues, you know, and because the poor people's access to health care in this country is still very, very limited, and you know, their health care occurs through emergency rooms, and that gets in the way of working. But then you also have the other things, you know, like, you know, most homeless people statistically are mothers and kids, you know. People think of sort of the single homeless guy when they think of homeless people or the stereotype of the bag lady, but, you know, the majority of homeless people are single moms with kids who can't take care of their kids and work at the same time and are in that bind. You know, if, you know, the incarceration of African Americans in this country is disproportional by a ratio of roughly 6-1. If you are an African American male felon, your odds of getting a job go down very dramatically. You get left out of the economy for that. I mean, the people who become homeless are the folks who are in a poor position to compete for that contracting pool mm-hmm. of affordable
yeah.
housing and livable wage jobs.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, and hearing all your examples, it's hard to kind of just point to one political or systematic root cause of it, right? Is it the health care that's not that great? Is it that we don't provide, you know, the right education? Is it that the prison? I mean, it seems like there's so many different directions that you can point fingers. I don't know.
Whole constellation of vulnerabilities. And, you know, what it really comes down to is that as a society, we have become increasingly comfortable with people who are marginal to the economy, who have no place in the economy, and have no systematic social support, and are more or less just thrown to the wolves, you know. I mean, they're out there on the street. They're not eligible for any kind of social support. If they're getting Social Security, you know, it's like $200 or $300 a month. Nobody can live on that. If they're getting, like, you know, disability Social Security, it's a very limited amount of money. You know, it's like $600 to $900 a month if they're getting that. People are just in very, very desperate straits, and we as a society allow that to happen. And what's at the bottom of that is dehumanization. You know, we would never allow that to happen if we actually thought of homeless people as being fully human. But there's this sort of mind trick that we do when we think of homeless people, when we look at homeless people, we don't really think of them as being human. We think of them as being homeless, which is this sort of other category, which we have, as a society, lowered our expectations for and accommodated to being this structural fact of our society that is going to continue.
Yeah, I think that that's, I want to talk more about that when we get back from the break, because I do think, I kind of want to understand what, I want to break that down a little bit, a bit further, because I think it's deeper than that. I'm not sure exactly where it's going to go, but I do think that it is that we've gotten comfortable with that. That's okay, and the dehumanizing piece of it, and that I'm curious about that. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Fired Up with CJ with Tim Harris, who's Executive Director of Real Change. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heart warmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our team inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to AspireMag.net today. No purchase necessary. And live an inspired life.
Now is the perfect time to learn Tai Chi and Qigong. These ancient Chinese healing arts, also called mind-body practice, are simple to learn, clinically proven to be effective, and can be practiced by anyone, anywhere, at any time. For 10 years, the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi has been a respected leader in mind-body practice training. Visit IIQTC.org. Empower yourself, empower others. Visit IIQTC.org for more information on mind body practice. IIQTC.org.
Are you feeling stuck? Do you want to be free from fears and doubts and finally feel good about yourself, but you just don't know how to get there? Dr. Schaub's Accelerated Breakthrough Program provides you with the tools and solutions to go beyond your limitations and achieve self-empowered confidence. Call for your free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. Visit CellularWisdom.com. That's CellularWisdom.com.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. TransformationTalkRadio.com, transforming the world one listener at a time.
This is the Transformation Talk Radio Network on Stereo 1230 WBLQ and worldwide WBLQ.net.
everybody. Welcome back. We're on Fired Up with CJ. My guest today is Tim Harris, who's the Executive Director of Real Change, which is the largest and most successful paper in the North America that takes action towards ending homelessness and poverty. You can find more about Real Change on www.realchangenews.org. So, Tim, during the break, we were talking about dehumanization, and I was kind of wrestling with, like, how did we get here?
Right.
And you were going to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I do is I teach a class on homelessness at the University of Washington. And one of the readings that I always give my students is an article that ran in the Stanford Social Review. And it describes an experiment that was done with college students at a fairly elite university. And they used brain imaging to show, you know, what part of the brain lights up when presented with certain images. And they found that when presented with images of people who had status, either positive or negative status, there was a part of the brain that lit up with that sort of emotional association. When they were shown pictures of people who were either obviously homeless or drug addicts, that part of the brain that registered as a human being who has status did not light up. What lit up instead was the part of the brain associated with the emotion of disgust, the same part of the brain that lit up with, like, images of disgusting garbage or overflowing toilets or vomit. That was the part of the brain that the emotion that was elicited was disgust. And the good news here is that this was a malleable reaction. It was elastic. You know, people could, over time, have a different association. And not everybody had that association. The majority did, but not everybody. And those who did have that association were able to change the way they think about it and have a different emotional reaction. But I think that this is a really, that this goes to the core of why we allow homelessness and mass incarceration, for that example, for that matter, to continue, is that many of us have, as I said, ceased seeing these folks as really being human. We are instead turned off, disgusted, we lose sight of their humanity, we see only the negative, and we become dismissive and blaming. And, you know, what's really disturbing is how this is often reinforced through public policy. I have seen this come up over and over again in our organizing and the sorts of issues that homeless people face around the country and how municipalities frame homelessness, where they sort of feed into that narrative as opposed to opposing it.
Right, so they're actually making – so let's go back a little bit and let's reverse a little bit. And there's so many different questions I have, but I wanted to ask about the malleable piece, because it seems like there is a different association. Even though, I mean, from my perspective as a coach, it seems like, you know, when I talk to clients, their biggest fear is being homeless, you know, and it's like, and falling into that despair. It's like, it basically is like looking at our greatest fear. So
absolutely.
When you see people like that,
part
I think
of
what it does.
It's a distancing mechanism, you know.
Yeah, it's like, it's like, an emotional, like, I can't deal with that, because that is basically my greatest fear in life, to actually fall into that state, because we're in a society that does not allow that, right? You have to be successful, and you have to have a reason for being, you have to work, you know, and if you don't have any of those things, it's like your greatest fear manifested in a human being, a poor person that's sitting on the side of the street. So, I mean,
and you know, mass homelessness is a great motivator, because people are desperate to not be homeless. I mean, you know, who wants to be this social pariah scum of the earth, you know? I mean, this is why people work, you know, meaningless jobs that they hate, who have no job security, and they get, like, minimum wage and no benefits. And they not only work those jobs, they work several of them to survive, because what's the alternative? You know,
right.
It's to fall through the cracks and become one of these people that everybody's terrified of becoming. So, you know, in that sense, it perpetuates some of the class injustices of the system by being this sort of negative example of the cost of not being in there scrapping to survive on whatever terms the market offers.
So how can we be more malleable? I mean, when they did this research in Stanford with these students, and how could they change the reaction from disgust, and what did they change it to, and how did they do it?
Well, you know, I'm not sure what they did in Stanford. I don't know really how that, because I just, you know, I've read sort of briefer discussions
right.
of this experiment, but I can bring it back to what I see at Real Change.
Right.
And
yeah.
that humanization of the relationships. You know, I mean, we live in a highly class stratified society where if you are a middle class person who's got education and lives in, you know, a more affluent part of town, you really have no reason to ever talk to somebody who is poor, much less homeless. You move in different circles. Our society is structured so that we don't run into each other. And our, you know, sort of public discourse is structured so that to some extent we're more fearful of each other.
Yeah.
You know, most people aren't
right.
going to walk up to a homeless person and just strike up a conversation. The beauty of street papers is that it lowers the fear barrier. You know, the fact that somebody's out there, they're wearing a badge, they're selling a street paper, you're familiar with the street paper, you know what it is, you know what their deal is. It lowers that fear barrier. It makes that person approachable. People approach those people, they buy the paper, they, you know, buy the paper over and over again, they strike up a relationship, they get to know them, they start telling each other about their lives. That person goes from being this abstraction, which is a homeless person, to being a real, living, breathing person who, you know, as a human being isn't fundamentally different from anybody else that they know. And through that experience, you know, of sort of humanizing relationships and interactions, you know, people's whole notion of what homelessness is about and who homeless people are and why they're there, that shifts.
It seems to me like what happens is compassion is built, right? Compassion is when you can look at another person and say, that could be me. That could easily be me. I mean, it's kind of the flip side of the fear is like, that could be me. Oh, my God. Versus, you know, that could be me. And as much as I love myself, I love this other being because I could – It could have been that I was disabled in these particular, my knees could go out one day and that could be me and I would want other people to treat me in a certain way and I want to treat this person in a certain way that's different than maybe the way that I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah, you know, I've heard compassion defined as empathy in action. It's sort of like empathy as a verb. To go from empathy to compassion, that empathy has to become active, you're engaged in it. And I think that, you know, structurally, that's what street papers allow to happen.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. I know we wanted to talk a little bit about your advocacy efforts. Tell us a little bit about, you know, some, and you've had a lot of success, actually, and you had mentioned earlier that one of the things that you do is you engage people in their own liberation, which I love that. I love that thought of, you know, versus actually having some abstract person coming up with a bunch of, like, big notebooks talking about homelessness with a bunch of staff. It's like having people who are on the street talking about it. I assume that's what you meant, what you're doing. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of our values that we bring to our organizing and our advocacy is that we do it in a cross-class relationship-based way. You know, I mean, we think that everybody has a piece to play, a part to play in social change, that there are ways for poor people and homeless people to engage, and there are ways for folks who are middle class and have more privilege and political clout and skills, there are ways for them to engage, and everybody's engagement is equally valid. And, you know, the real magic is when people come together across class, bringing all of their authenticity and their assets to it, and you know, sort of push that rock up the hill together.
Yeah. And it, when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about, because I know that you've actually had a couple of these efforts where, in fact, you've had a bunch of people come together and push the rock up the hill. So I want to hear a little bit more about that. So everyone, you're listening to Fired Up with CJ. Today we have Tim Harris, who's the Executive Director of Real Change, a nonprofit in Seattle that creates opportunity and a voice to low-income people. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking more with Tim about some of the effective advocacy efforts of his organization. You can find out more about our guests and listen to this and past shows by going to www.fireitupwithcj.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heart warmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Are you ready to tap into the healer within? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Did you know the real doctor is the source that lives within you, that heals within you minute by minute every day? The healer within is the innate intelligence of the human body. When we cut our hand with a piece of glass, we don't have to command the body to close the wound and grow new skin. It knows how to heal itself. We do have to nourish the skin by disinfecting it and remove the glass, or it cannot heal. The innate healer relies upon us to assist in this healing process. Our role is to identify its needs, provide the substances required for the healing, and remove the obstacle. CRA, Contact Reflex Analysis, is an energy assessment which translates human energy into information. This information provides me with the ability to identify your needs as a healer and to design a specific solution for you. Contact us to achieve optimal health at 888-777-4232. That's 888-777-4232, and visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
Ugh, aren't you tired of the same old negative vibe?
Hey, Valerie, have you heard about TransformationTalkRadio.com?
No, what's that?
Dr. Pat is launching a new network. And
Dr. Pat! How many hours is she going to be on?
It won't be all Dr. Pat. She'll be joined by her friends, transformative hosts from around the globe. TransformationTalkRadio.com is a 24/7 network.
24 hours of Dr. Pat and her guests?
No, 24 hours of Dr. Pat and her hosts.
Oh, very good. When does this start?
This starts in August.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Where's it going to be broadcast?
You're going to be able to hear her in Seattle, Boston, Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island, on over 300 cable radio stations, and on the internet everywhere. Listen live at TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Great! We should spread the word!
Absolutely, spread the word. Go to TransformationTalkRadio.com.
1230 WPLQ.
This is Transformation Talk Radio on stereo 1230 WBLQ and streaming worldwide on the internet at WBLQ.net.
Hi, we're back on Fired Up with CJ. My guest today is Tim Harris, who's the executive director of Real Change, who've done some really interesting, innovative things with respect to ending homelessness and poverty. But before we continue, I want to make sure that everyone knows how to get to Tim's website, which is www.realchangenews.org. So, Tim, you were holding me in suspense during the break. You said you're going to give me about something that was going to blow my mind apart. So now I'm kind of curious how you're going to blow my mind apart in the next 15 minutes. We were talking about, I assume it's about how people have come together across various, people from all different walks of life have come together along with the homeless and working and advocating things for on the behalf of the homeless. I assume that that's what this blowing of my mind is going to be. Is that right?
I want to tell you about a couple of issues that we've really made a difference on and how they sort of tie together, how they link. And these are really, you know, homeless people are facing the same issues in cities everywhere. And it comes back to that dehumanization and really criminalization of people who are surplus to the economy. So one of the things that is happening as we become increasingly unequal society, inequality in the United States is now, you know, statistically more severe than it was during the robber baron period in 1920.
Wow.
We have historically wide levels of inequality. And one of the expressions that takes is the transformation of the American city. You know, I like to describe American cities, Seattle in particular, as an island of affluence in a sea of rising inequality, where those who can afford urban living are coming to live in the city, and these tend to be highly skilled professionals who are making an income, a good income. Along with that comes gentrification of urban land values, housing costs, rental costs, and other people who, you know, don't have that privilege of having that sort of an income get pushed out into the outlying suburbs. We're seeing this sort of a flip you know, the demographics of the urban cities and the suburbs. And poor people are still stuck in the cities because that's where the tax base is to be able to fund the human services that we need. So there's a contradiction there. Here in Seattle, we have seen a condo boom where at one point there were so many condo developments going up in this city that you literally could not get a crane west of the Mississippi. They were all being used.
Wow.
You know, every five or six blocks you would see a crane and there was a condo going up. And what precipitated that boom was a rise in residential building height zoning regulations where they could, you know, build higher and skinnier, and it was like a condo development gold rush.
Right.
Well, that was going on. There was a crackdown on urban camping because the developers and the city politicians, the mayor in particular, they did not want the, you know, sight lines from these nice new condos that were going up through the city being people looking out their window underneath the highway viaduct to homeless people who are camped out there surviving. Our one-night count here in Seattle always shows that we have roughly a third of the total number of homeless people that we have in Seattle, roughly a third of them are sleeping out any given night. A lot of people are surviving outside. And there was a crackdown during this condo boom where the mayor instituted a zero-tolerance policy of homeless encampments within the city, and zero tolerance meant it was not allowed to sleep outside within the city limits of Seattle. If you were doing that, you were vulnerable to having your tent taken away, all of your possessions being taken away, and getting a no trespass order from ever coming back to that place again. And if you violated that trespass order, it could lead to misdemeanor charges, which would take you into the court system and eventually perhaps put you in jail.
Right.
It was a horrible period here, and we fought that tooth and nail. We had encampments every 3 months outside of City Hall. Our largest ones were more than 100 people coming to sleep right there on City Hall Pavilion in tents, homeless people and middle-class people together. And we basically pledged, you know, as long as you're doing this, we are going to keep coming back. We did civil disobedience. We blocked the street with homeless people, ministers, activists, forced them to arrest us. It got a lot of media. We helped to form a protest encampment that lasted for, well, it's still going, but this was a protest encampment that the city tried to shut down that existed for 2 years, and they would come, they would arrest people, they would take the tents. People would get out of jail, and they'd just set up the encampment again somewhere else, you know. This, like, mm-hmm. went on for more than 2 years. And, you know, we eventually won on that issue because we were persistent and we did not give up. And they have recently allowed that tent city a permanent parcel of land to exist on so that homeless people have a place that they can go when they're sleeping out that's legitimate. And they have repealed, essentially, their zero-tolerance policy on urban camping because they've been forced to realize that, you know, people have to be somewhere and that it doesn't help to criminalize them. This is a reality that they have to deal with. And they have to help people as opposed to criminalize them. The other campaign that we did was on the flip side of it, because that condo boom crashed. And along with, you know, developers going into bankruptcy when the housing bubble burst and the credit market fell through, you had 20 to 25% downtown office vacancy rates.
Right.
Anytime that happens, homeless people on the street become the scapegoat. They are the visible poor that merchants will say is driving away their business and making the downtown an unfriendly place. And they will, you know, try to do things like criminalize panhandling. And these two things are something that are happening in cities all across America. The crackdowns on the urban camping and the criminalization of visible poverty and panhandling to, you know, basically try to get those things off of the downtown streets that make the affluent people that these streets are increasingly built for uncomfortable. And we were able to oppose that and win for a number of reasons. But, you know, I think the most critical piece of us winning that campaign was coming together in alliance with the American Civil Liberties Union and the NAACP and framing it as a issue of fundamental human and civil rights, as opposed to the city frame, which was about criminality and fear. During the fight around urban camping, we actually saw a direct relationship between how campers were described in city press releases, which always talked about things like hypodermic needles, feces, gallon jars of urine, tonnages of trash in these campsites. It was like a mantra that was steadily repeated, and it was repeated in the media. And one of the things that we made happen was an academic study of the language of the city press releases and how they created this. And they said that the city created an intentional discourse of filth and contagion in the way they described these campsites to the media, and the media in turn picked it up. What we were able to do through having the media actually talk to homeless campers who were, you know, protesting at protesting
Hey, Tim, I'm so sorry.
That,
you know what? I just realized I was so enthralled with your with your story that I realize we only have a minute left, time left. So I'm so sorry. I assume that your story is on your website because I know that
there's plenty of information there. But I guess the bottom line is you can oppose the dehumanization and you can win and you can change that frame that says people aren't deserving and you can do whatever you want to them.
Yeah, I mean, those are fantastic stories. I have so many questions, but alas, we're at the end of our conversation. This should be an hour and a half show. So I really want to thank you, Tim. You have blown open my mind. I didn't know what to think, but now I think I have a lot of, I have a very...
Did I blow your mind, CJ?
You did blow my mind. You blew my mind. And I think I'm walking away, and I hope other people, too, are walking away with a better perspective on what's happening and a clearer sense of how they can do what they can do to help. I mean, primarily, it's make sure not to dehumanize these people who have had, you know, a rough life. But anyways,
began.
I want to thank you so much. I want to thank all of you for tuning in to Fired Up with CJ. Please join me every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Next Thursday on Fired Up with CJ, we're going to get our monthly installment with Rogany Michaels, a behavioral change expert, on how you can move your holiday blues to bliss during the holiday season. Have a great week, and I'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to Fire It Up with CJ. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for more of Fire It Up with CJ. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com. Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters. Be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.